This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Welcome to the People Speak Radio Show. I'm your host, Michael Strasser. The People Speak normally airs every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network. You can participate during the show with call-in questions for our guests toll-free in the U.S. and Canada. The number is 1-888-429-5471. That is 1-888-429-5471. To be honest, I was informed of this at the last moment, and I am filling in for somebody. We have a very special show tonight. Our guest is Max Egan. His website is thecrowhouse.com that I have open right now. How are you doing, Max?
I'm doing very well, brother. Thanks for asking me on the show. It's a pity Steve couldn't be here. I hope that he's okay.
Well, everything's going all right on my side. I had a cup of oolong tea not too long ago. And I am seeing that you are pro-Palestinian, which is a very good thing. This is a issue that I don't think is spoken about on mainstream media enough, so I like hammering the issue.
Yeah, look, I think it's a really important issue. I think Palestine provides an opportunity for the world. I really do. I think that Gaza Strip itself provides an opportunity for the world. I think it's a very underreported issue, and when it is reported, it's extremely biased what we hear. We only ever hear the pro-Israeli side. We get told that Palestinians are terrorists and blah, blah, blah. We never get to hear the truth of the matter at all. And I think it's really interesting the steps that Israel has to go to perpetuate the myth. I mean, even recently we've seen the, I think it's the Israeli domestic security minister has deemed that any Palestinian who posts anything anti-Israel on Facebook or any social media will be deemed as a terrorist and have their house bulldozed. And they're trying to push that to form a coalition to create a global internet censorship of any criticism of Israel. And that should speak volumes to anybody. I mean, what other nation has to go to all this trouble to prevent people from criticizing its actions? And what are the actions that it's carrying out, which is creating all this criticism, you know? And honestly, I think it provides an opportunity. I think the fact that Gaza Strip is an open war crime, because it is, it's collective punishment, which is a breach of Article 33 of the Fourth Geneva Convention. This provides an opportunity for the world, because you find that there are thousands upon thousands of politicians all around the planet, all of who are doing atrocious things in our own communities, who are all supporting this war crime. And their support for this war crime makes them war criminals. So this makes all of their legislation invalid, and it gives us a means that we can use to roll back all this legislation and address this cacistocracy that's taken over this earth. Really, that's what it is. It's, I mean, people call it an oligarch, and I guess it is, but it's ultimately a cacistocracy, which is when the worst people in the world, you know, the worst possible people for the job, rise to a position of power and start enacting legislation for their own benefit to the permanent detriment of all other classes. And that's what we've got. We've got a multinational, multi-generational criminal cabal, and Israel is one of their mechanisms. The Palestinian people is one of their mechanisms. And not only does it provide them the tools they need for control, but it also provides us a way out. It provides us an opportunity if people would just look at the issue properly and look at it with an open heart, you know, put down all this stuff. You know, forget whether it's Palestinians and Muslims or Israelis and Jews and all of this sort of stuff. It's about people, you know. It's collective punishment, and the average age in Gaza is 17, so it's collective punishment of children. It's an open war crime, and it's child abuse, and it's an opportunity for the world if we just pay attention to it. So yeah, it's good that you're a Palestinian activist. It's a very underreported issue, and it's a very under acted upon issue. I mean, I speak about it so much, I think it's probably ad nauseum to people. They're probably sick of hearing me say it, but it's such an important issue, and it's such an opportunity for all of us that I just wish people would look at it.
Well, it's hypocritical on their part, in my view, because in the rest of the world, they seem to be preaching one thing and they seem to be doing something totally different when it comes to the Palestinians in their own homeland.
Well, yeah, I mean, they are. I mean, well, but everything they say is backwards. Everything the Israeli government says is backwards. Everything our government says is backwards. The whole system's backwards. It's all upside down. So, you know, I mean, it's finding the way out. It's finding the mechanism that's going to work, that's going to lead us out of this mess. And Palestine is a perfect tool that we can use to do it. You know, I mean, you can get into all the semantics of whether the people there have any claim to the land and all of the issues that go along with it, you know, which is endless debate and endless misinformation. And you sit there arguing on the fence for days and months and years. And meanwhile, the Palestinian people continue to suffer. But, you know, if we can put it all down and just look at it as a basic war crime of collective punishment, which is what it is, and put down all the stuff, whether it's Palestinians and Jews and Muslims or Israelis or whatever, it's children in collective punishment. That's the thing, and it's a key that we can all use. So I believe that's the way it needs to be looked at, you know. And it's an opportunity that we're not always going to have because it's getting horrendous in Gaza. It's not even going to be there in another 5 or 6 years, I don't think, because it's getting so polluted, it's getting so difficult to live there. Even Netanyahu now is even talking about conducting another war against them. So it just doesn't stop, you know. And if we don't seize the opportunity soon, it's going to be taken from us. So, yeah, I hope people pay attention to it while they still have the chance, you know.
Something that you said that really piqued my interest, because I only read something about it briefly, came through my Facebook feed, and it was about Israel being involved in this worldwide internet censorship force. And I was wanting to know if you could tell the audience kind of the specifics about that.
Well, it's about people criticizing Israel. They don't want any criticism of Israel. That's the thing, you know. Like, Israel's carrying out rampant war crimes. It really is, and it's got nothing to do with the Jews. It's the people who control Israel, which is mainly, you know, it's Rothschild control, it's Khazars. I mean, like I said, there's so many semantics you can do to get into it. But the fact that you know, this whole war on terror, the whole thing is being run by Israel. The whole ISIS is being run by Israel. All the nations that are being destabilized in the Middle East are all part of the Greater Israel Project. This is coming to light now. And so that's mainly what Israel is concerned about. I mean, there's all sorts of internet censorship they want to bring in anyway. They're basically stopping any criticism. They're outlawing dissent in all of our countries. I mean, it's happening globally. But with Israel specifically, what it wants to censor is any criticism of its actions. And this signifies guilt. I mean, this shows that it's a guilty state. You know, even the fact that you've got Hasbara, you know, groups of people who go out there and are paid to counter Israeli criticism by posting Israeli propaganda everywhere. This just shows how guilty this state is. Excuse me. And, you know, it has a lot to hide. It has a lot of things to hide. So anyone who calls for censorship is trying to cover the truth. It has things to hide, you know. Truth does not fear, you know, it does not fear exposure, does not fear investigation, and you should be free to talk and comment about anything and have any political view you like. And the state of Israel is a rogue state that is carrying out war crime after war crime. It's infiltrated into all of our governments. Well, at least the people who control Israel have infiltrated into all of our governments. That's a game. We get into the whole history of the thing and the Khazars, the fake Jews that are running the place. But you know, its main goal with censorship is stifling any criticism of its actions so it can continue to expand. Because that's what it's been doing ever since it was founded. It's been expanding. And it could go in and destroy the Palestinian people straight away. I mean, Gaza Strip's very small and so is West Bank. It'd go and take it out in a week if it really wanted to. But it
Greater
doesn't.
Israel.
Well, Greater Israel, yeah. But Palestine is and West Bank, I'm saying, are very small. Israel could take them out very, very quickly if it wanted to, because, you know, they've got no army. It would be very, very easy to remove the Palestinian people if they were really terrorists, but it needs them there so that it's got that perceived constant threat always at its door, which gives it the excuse to expand into Greater Israel. And that's what the war on terror is about. That's what ISIS is doing. It's going and destabilizing all of the countries that are outlined in Oded Yunus.
In all of the regions that the Greater Israel would be in, I mean, including Syria, isn't that nuts?
Yeah, it's all there. It's all there in their plans. I mean, if you really want to understand what's going on in the Middle East, there's three documents you can read, and Europe as well. There's three documents you can read. One of them is called A Strategy for Israel in the 1980s by a man called Oded Yinin. And you'll get that on my website, thecrowhouse.com. If you scroll down the homepage, there's a section there called Essential Reading, and you'll find the document there. And that explains exactly what's going on in the Middle East now. And there's another document there called Confessions of a British Spy. And this shows how the Middle East was divided up, how the Saudi regime was all put in place. It goes way back to sort of Lawrence of Arabia days and the forming of the Suez Canal and all that sort of stuff. And that shows, you look at that, and that shows where this whole enmity towards Islam came from, because it's unjustified. There should be no enmity towards Islam. All of the bad Islamic stuff that we see, all the so-called Islamic extremism and terrorism, is all this hubbyist tech theory type doctrines that have all been introduced into the area by the West. It's a perversion of Islam. So we've done all that as well. So you read that document, Confessions of a British Spy, and you read Oded Yinin's Strategy for Israel in the 1980s, and that's exactly what's going on in the Middle East now. And if you read another document called the Kalergi Plan, which was put forth back in the 1930s, I think, or 20s, it talks about the extinction of the white races and how it's going to be done through Europe. And that's exactly what we see in Europe now, why all these refugees have been pushed in there. It's all been done by the same people. It's all the same mechanism, and it's the same mechanism that's infiltrated into all of our governments and is funneling all this weaponry and all this support in there for this state and what it's doing. And the real Jews of the area are the ones who's getting the blame for it, when ultimately it's these usurpers, these Khazars that came down from Europe that have created the whole problem. I mean, Israel and Palestine existed as a functional, cohesive state, you know, side by side together as one, basically. I mean, Israel was always the holy land that existed within Palestine for time immemorial. And they lived there in perfect peace, Muslim, Christian, and Jew. Everyone got along with each other. They babysitted their own children as recently as 1946 until the Europeans came along and created this entire mess. And the reason they're doing it is not because they're actual Jews or because they have any claim to Israel. It's because they can fake a claim to it and get away with it and get the people to go along with it by the scenario that's been outlined in the Bible, and also because it's a very, very strategic area to own. You know, if you populate that area of Greater Israel, you've got control of all the Caspian Basin, you've got control of most of the world's oil reserves, you've also got control of all the major shipping routes, because all the shipping routes go through Suez and the Straits of Aden. So if you can control those areas, you've really got the world by the short and curlies. And at that point as well, you're in a strategic position where you're able to strike missile strikes against any country in Europe, and they're not really going to want to hit you because you've got all the oil reserves and you've got all the shipping routes. And if they blow up the shipping routes, it only takes one ship to sink in the Suez Canal or the Straits of Aden, and you've messed up global shipping for as long as it takes to remove the ship. And if it's a tanker, that could be a long time. So, you know, you can completely mess up global commerce by dropping bombs in the wrong area, anywhere around Suez or Aden. So, you know, it's a very, very strategically advantageous area to own. And so that's what the plan's really about, you know. And they go in there, they take it over, they keep their race pure, pretend they're Jews, we can only breed together, we push all these refugees into Europe, we merge all the Europe into one race, and then you've got the Jews and the Goyim as outlined in the Talmud and all this sort of stuff. And that's the way they're going. I mean, these people are more zealous Jews than the actual Jews. You know, it's quite sickening to see how it's all unfolding. But it's a very clever plan, and it's a very obvious plan. If you read the right documents, they admit it. They admit that this is the plan. Even there was recently a woman in Europe talking about how they're going to bring all the migrants into Europe. And they said, and yes, it will be the Jews behind it, and people may resent us for this, but they need to understand that this is how it must go. This is the best thing for the future, blah, blah, blah. But what future are they talking about? They're talking about the future that they wish to create for them, you know, which is all part of this ridiculous, perverse dream they've got of Greater Israel, you know, which I don't think personally is going to happen. I think the world's going to wake up and they're going to nip it in the bud before it actually comes into effect.
Max, would you mind taking a caller?
No, that's fine.
First, I need to say that this is Michael Strasser on the People Speak Radio talking to our guest, Max Egan. We have a caller on the line. Caller, can you please give us your first name, location,
yeah, hi,
question,
Max,
or comment for our guest?
Hey, Max.
Hey, how are you? Who's this?
Good, good, good to hear you. It's refreshing to hear some truth being spoken in, on the show. Now, I'd like to know, what is your prognosis of what's going on in the Middle East with ISIS and all that? When do you expect the Middle East to, when do you expect Israel to establish Greater Israel? Well, do you think this will be the result of the coming World War III, or is this plan in the works as we speak? I mean, what's your whole take on this? That's my question.
Look, both. I mean, it's definitely in the pipeline as we speak, and the whole concept of World War III is precisely for this objective. That's what it's about. You know, with World War III, you'll notice that we've got a plane about to come over. But with the onset of World War III, the way they're trying to push it, you notice that it's always Israel saying that, oh, look, France must get involved, or Germany must get involved, or the United States must get involved. But it's never about Israel getting involved. It's always about other people getting involved to support Israeli interests. Israel's always too busy defending itself, in inverted commas, from all of these terrible Muslim menace in the area. So it's about destabilizing the entire world and forming Greater Israel. I mean, that's what World War III is about. It's an ongoing plan, and if they don't bring about World War III, then they're trying to do it this other way. But, I mean, World War III, I think it's almost inevitable now because of this huge influx of refugees into Europe. I mean, World War III is going to be fought in the suburbs in all of these countries. It's not going to be what anyone thought it would be. It won't be nations sort of squaring off against each other. I don't think Russia and China are really going to be that stupid to start throwing nuclear bombs around the place. So, and they don't have to. They don't have to. I mean, Western society is imploding. It's eating itself.
Where does America stand in all this? I mean, everybody keeps talking about the decline, about the dollar going to collapse, and the economy will be in a global recession and all that. But where does America stand in all this? What's going to happen to America in the near future?
Well, America will implode if the people don't pay attention. I mean, unfortunately, America is controlled by Israeli interests. You've got, every politician in America has to sign the AIPAC treaty in order to get funding for their election. So it's all funded by Israel anyway. I mean, that in itself is treason. You know, and until the American people stand up and call it, you know, America will just go down the tube if the people don't start applying the law to their own politicians. You know, the law needs to be applied. You've got a beautiful constitution in the United States, and you need to go back to that. It's almost getting, you know, past the point where that can happen. But, I mean, that's the problem, is that Israel is controlled by, I mean, America is controlled by Israeli interests, and it'll just be hung out to dry. And with what they're doing, you know, they're flooding the global market with oil at the moment, and the U.S. dollar is attached so much to oil that as the price of oil is dropping, then the U.S. dollar's got to decline. And, I mean, it has to happen. It has to happen at some stage. I just hope the American people have the nous and the integrity and the fortitude to actually stand up and call their government out for what it is. And you know, go back to square one, reinstate the Constitution and start again, cancel the debts, start again.
Well, thanks a lot, Max. It's refreshing to hear you. Thank you very much, and have yourself a great day. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much for calling. Mike in California has a question. He said, any comments about Rebecca Roth, 9/11 author, who seems to have many aliases and is under a great deal of criticism and scrutiny by many in the 9/11 movement?
Yeah, look, that's a really interesting thing. I'm watching it with interest. I've actually been in contact with Rebecca Roth. I was quite impressed with her book, like so many were when it first came out. The question of her being an airline, not actually being an airline flight attendant, that of course raises serious issues. I think a lot of the information that she brought out about the Israeli connections was actually very valid information. A lot of it wasn't hers. A lot of it came from other people. There's actually someone that I know who's actually a friend of the host who was supposed to be on this show, who, through Freedom of Information requests, got hold of a lot of the information that Rebecca Roth used. I've spoken to her, and she said that she had permission to use his stuff, and that's all very well. You know, there is question that perhaps she was meant to be found out, because that then discredits the information that she presented. Some of the information may not be valid, but I think in amongst it there is some very valid information. It's concerning that she put herself forth as the first one to actually connect Israel to 9/11, which is ridiculous because there were connections. There was a movie that came out, I can't remember the name of it, But there was a 9/11 movie that came out, got completely wiped from YouTube, and you got threats of having your channel deleted if you even uploaded this movie, which showed all the Israeli connections, and that came out quite close to the event happening. So she wasn't the one that brought Israel to the foreground in this, but it's concerning. It's concerning that a lot of the information that she brought is being thrown out with her. Whether she's a plant or whether she's just an opportunist, I don't know. Certainly she has aliases. Certainly she does not seem to have any history of actually being a flight attendant. And certainly after so many lies have been told, it's difficult to know what truth is. So it's muddied the waters considerably, unfortunately. But I guess you've just got to take that as the way it is. I mean, these sorts of things should be expected. You're going to have a lot of disinformation put out there. And the best way to put out disinformation is to combine it with truth. That way people throw the baby out with the bathwater. So though her personality may well be in question and her motives may well be in question, I still do believe that there was a lot of valid information in amongst the stuff that she was saying. Because you know, she really got information from everywhere and sort of rolled it all into one and appeared to try to take credit for it, which was unfortunate. But again, I hope people don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. There was a lot of good stuff that was said in there. And there certainly are Israeli ties to 9/11. In fact, Israeli fingerprints are all over it. In fact, there's enough evidence to mount a case and secure a conviction in any court in the world against certain members within the United States and Israeli governments, if anyone would actually take it to trial, if the media would actually address the issue and make a bit of noise about it, we could actually get some legal action against a lot of elements that actually carried out 9/11, provably were involved in it. And the media themselves are hugely complicit in this whole thing. And in fact, the media have got so much blood on their hands, it's ridiculous, because they promote the lie. They sell the lie to everybody. Even the lie that made us go to the Gulf War, the Iraq War, the War on Terror, everything that we've done since 9/11 has all been sold to us by the media. You know, the propaganda of war that they have sold to the people. And propaganda of war, we can go back to the Geneva Convention again. This is the most serious war crime you can commit, because without the propaganda of war, then none of the other war crimes can happen. None of the genocide, none of the ethnic cleansing, none of the bombing campaigns, none of the drone strikes, none of it can happen with an honest media. And it's the media that has sold this lie to the world. They have more blood on their hands than the governments, as far as I'm concerned, because the governments are bought and paid for when they get to office. You know, these politicians are selected for us before we can elect them. But the media, they are independent and they have a responsibility, and they do not uphold to that responsibility. They do not uphold to their duty of care. And they are hugely complicit and very much responsible for this situation that we're in.
But you were physically assaulted.
I was just going to say I kind of went off topic with that one, but yeah, it all ties together anyway.
You were physically assaulted in Australia at a pro-Palestinian rally. I mean, led up to that?
Well, basically saying the stuff that I've been saying tonight and pointing out the opportunity that Gaza provides for us, and that Israel is a terrorist state that employs vast resources to cover up its terrorism and its war crimes and its human rights abuses. And someone stood up and started heckling him in the audience and basically followed me to the restaurant that night, and I got jumped when I left the restaurant. Ended up, you know, a bit beaten up and a couple of cracked ribs, but, you know, you expect that. It gives you a taste of what it's like to be a Palestinian, you know, and it really just makes my voice stronger, makes me want to speak louder, you know. It reaffirms that I'm on the right track, you know. But I think it's an incredibly important issue, Palestine. I really do. I think it's a huge opportunity for the world, and it's something that we could use to step into our humanity and remember that we are human. You know, like I said, put down all your stuff of whether it's Israelis or Palestinians. It's just kids. It's kids in jail. You know, there's people in Palestine that live 20 miles from the ocean and 30 years old, and they've never seen the ocean because they're kept in collective punishment, you know. And in West Bank, I mean, they're just going rampant, bulldozing homes, harassing every Palestinian who goes out and walks down the street. They just throw a knife on the ground and shoot them and call knife attack. And most of these attacks are staged. It's all a setup. So, you know, you start saying all of this sort of stuff in public. And I actually had video footage that shows that the recent bus attack in Hebron or Jerusalem, where there was a couple of Palestinians that went onto a bus a couple of months ago and apparently shot and stabbed a bunch of Israelis, this didn't happen. I know someone who lives around the corner, right around the corner from that bus stop. And they went down there with a video camera, and there were no Palestinians on the bus. They brought a couple of prisoners on and shot them as the perpetrators. All the people left the bus calmly. The settlers shot the bus up themselves. The whole thing was staged and used as an excuse to lock down West Bank. So they start saying all of this sort of stuff in public speaking events, and you'll find that there's people there. There was actually a woman and obviously an accomplice came there specifically because I was booked to speak there, and a friend of mine, Ken O'Keefe, was also booked to speak there as well, but they wouldn't let Ken into the country, so he didn't get into Australia. He wasn't able to talk, but they were there because they believed that there may be anti-Semitism there at the talk, and of course, any criticism of Israel or naming the war crimes of Israel is seen as anti-Semitism. So that's basically what happened, Joe. And like I said, you've got to expect this if you're going to start speaking out on these issues. And all it really does, again, is confirm that you're on the right track, you know.
I guess this kind of leads up into what Jane in Wisconsin is saying, I think Max protects, quote, real Jews and bashes, quote, fake Jews. I guess she is critical of the Khazar theory.
Well, look, Jewish people, it's a supremacist ideology, it is. But then I know Jewish people who call themselves Jewish, but they don't practice the faith. So you've got to wonder, you know, why do you call yourself Jewish if you don't practice the faith? Because it's not a race, it's a religion. But they're trained to understand and believe that it's a race. I mean, not all Jews are bad people. There's not all Jews that follow this ideology. And not all Khazars are bad people. I mean, most white-skinned Jews that you see are from the Khazar line, and they're not all bad people. So the problem is that within Judaism itself, because Judaism, if you really read it, I mean, it's an extremist ideology. It is. I mean, the whole concept of being God's chosen and all this sort of stuff, this is weird stuff. It is a weird stuff to think. I mean, I don't know how anyone could sort of, you know, embrace that type of ideology. But when you look at it, it's quite supremacist. And when you get fundamentalists and extremists who latch onto these supremacist ideologies within the faith, then you get the problems. And there are extremist elements that exist within Judaism, the same as there are within all religions. I mean, there are extremist faiths, certainly extremist ideologies that exist within Islam. There certainly are within Christianity. Look at the Spanish Inquisition. I mean, these people were about as Christian as sliced bread, you know. I mean, these people weren't anywhere near Christian. They just simply latched on to certain aspects of the faith, and they'd become extremist about it and kind of form their own mafia. And that's what you've got within Judaism as well. You've got certain elements within the faith that are extremist elements that have basically formed their own mafia. And because they are so influential around the world, they've managed to influence global events. And they've done this through the mechanism of the Holocaust. You know, the invented words like anti-Semitism. You know, what other race has a word, what other faith has a word that is used to describe criticism of that faith or race? I mean, what is a word that you use to describe dislike for Chinese people? There isn't one. What is a word you use to describe dislike for black people or white people, African people, you know, people from Paraguay? There isn't one.
They just call it racism, yeah.
Exactly, it's just racism. But if you dislike what the Jewish faith does or elements within the Jewish faith do, it's called anti-Semitism. And the Jews get the blame for what these extremists within the faith do. And they hide behind the term anti-Semitism, and they go for broke. They go for broke. They make it so obvious that there is a Jewish control over all of our systems. And little people who don't really go along with any of this, they get the blame for it. And they get persecuted. So then the Jews feel like they're persecuted. So, oh my God, we're the most persecuted race. So we've got to be defensive and have this victim mentality and all this stuff. So it's a program. It's a self-perpetuating program. You know, you've got this extremist element which makes the world really dislike them, and all the little people get the blame for it. And so you've really got to step above it, and you've got to realize that it's the result of an extremist ideology that exists within that particular faith. And there's been a great deal of effort gone to cover it up, you know, simply through the invention of words like the Holocaust and like anti-Semitism and all this sort of stuff. You know, there's all these words that exist for you, like diaspora. There's all these words, these invented words that exist within the Jewish faith to basically idolize and exalt and separate these people from the rest of the world.
And even if you don't go along with it, like Jewish people that I know who don't go along with the faith, they're not fundamentalists like their parents or anything like that, but they still feel obliged to identify themselves as Jews because of the guilt they feel by not doing so, because of the poor pain the Jews felt because of the Holocaust. So it's the Holocaust that ties people who really have no ideological connection to the faith, but it still ties them to the Jewish strain because they're kind of trained. It's an incredible program. You know, but you can't hate all Jews. It's ridiculous. You know, I don't hate Jews at all, but I can see this mechanism in play. And when you look at all of our governments and all banking systems and all education systems and all scientific institutions and everything of importance on this planet, you see this disproportionate Jewish control over all of these institutions.
This applies hugely in politics. And I think this leads up to a question by Carol in Illinois, who says, you know, asks if you have any opinion on Bernie Sanders, who some people are somehow touting as pro-Palestinian, but seems to agree with the rest of Congress that Israel has a right to defend itself. I saw him at a rally start, you know, with the usual line, Hamas is sending rockets into Israel. I mean, what are your comments on this?
Well, look, every politician who gets electoral funding has to sign the AIPAC agreement, which agrees to support Israel. That's why they can't criticize Israel. Israel has the right to defend itself. Do the Palestinians have the right to defend themselves? Because none of the actions that Israel has carried out have been defensive. They've been aggressive ever since day one. The only thing they're defending themselves is Palestinian resistance against their aggression. And I don't know how you really call that defense. You know, they're an invading, occupying force. They have been since day one. The people who actually initiated the whole thing, if you go back to the Balfour Declaration, World War One, these people had no claim to the land. These are Khazars from Europe. They have no ancestral claim to the land. They have no genetic claim to the land. So, no, I don't put any faith in Bernie Sanders at all. I think it's theater for the masses. Bernie Sanders is also pro-vaccination. I mean, I think all of this stuff is theater. You know, people are selected for us to vote for. If you really want to vote for someone, find an independent. Find an independent somewhere or run yourself or something. I mean, you know, all of these people, I think, are compromised. I really don't trust any of them. It's a very, very clever system that's been put in place. It really is, you know. But anyone who says Israel has the right to defend itself, well, yeah, everybody has the right to defend itself, but Israel's actions are not defensive. Israel's carrying out war crimes, and if any politician is in support of Israel, then they're a war criminal. It's as simple as that. Under their own law, they're war criminals, you know, and I don't think it's going to change until we call it, you know. Stop being led down the garden path by these people and actually call it out for what it is, you know, and say, hey, this is a war crime. Are you going to address this war crime? And we're not debating whether it's a war crime. Here's a copy of the Geneva Convention. Go read it. It's already established. Article 33, 4th Geneva Convention. Read that page. It's a war crime. So are you going to address it? If you're not, and you're going to get in office and you're going to support this state and say, it has the right to defend itself, when really what you're saying is it's allowed to continue carrying out these war crimes, then you're going to be a war criminal like everyone else as soon as you take office. And in fact, you're guilty of treason even if you've signed the AIPAC treaty. You know, what are you pledging allegiance to a foreign power in order to secure electoral funding in this country for?
It's treason.
Who put the legislation in place that even allowed that to happen? That's a joke. That's an absolute joke.
It's treason, and we know what the penalty for that is, you know.
Exactly. And why are all these dual citizens allowed in government? Do you allow dual Chinese citizens in there? What if I go and get Australian citizen, American citizenship? I'm a dual American-Australian citizen. Can I enter politics? I bet I can't. But how come a dual Israeli citizen can? What's that all about? And why are all these people in really, really high positions? And why is America waging all these wars in the Middle East when it doesn't affect America? None of these countries are a threat to America. All you're doing is expanding Israel according to the outline of the Greater Israel Project. And it's very, very obvious. And, you know, people need to wake up and smell the coffee. You know, this whole war on terror is putting Muslim against Christian. And have you noticed the programming in that? Have you noticed how whenever it's a gang of brown-skinned men, it's a gang of Muslims? It's not a gang of Arabs. It's a gang of Muslims. How do you know what their religion are? Did you speak to them? Did you question them? How do you know they're not Hindu? How do you know they even practice their faith? You know, if we're going to call all these dark-skinned Arab men gangs of Muslims, well, why don't we call gangs of Europeans gangs of Christians? Why don't we put America, Australia, England, Europe, and put it all in one basket and say the Christians are attacking Syria or the Christians are attacking Iraq? We don't. We don't label all the white races into this one basket. Why do we label all the Arab races into this one basket and turn it into a race war and a religious war and pit East against West? Who's responsible for putting this meme in place? You know, we've got to see how we're being played with all this, you know. And like I said, you've always got Israel sitting there on the sidelines telling everybody else to attack everybody, but Israel just sits there and says, oh, no, no, we're staying here to defend ourselves. It's a joke. Yeah, the world's being played.
Well, I guess that kind of, you know, part of what you said there kind of touches on what someone had asked about what the and you mentioned the Balfour Declaration. It's funny that that question came in right about that time about what the British intention was when they gave them the land in 1948.
Well, getting themselves out of the mess that they were in World War One was what it was all about. Like the Balfour Declaration was written in 1916 after World War One. And yeah, you know, they got the land in 1948 after the Holocaust, of course, which was something kind of different. But I mean, the Balfour Declaration was basically just acknowledging the agreement that they made with the Zionist Jews in England and Germany to get America involved in the war, so that England wouldn't have to surrender to Germany, because Germany had basically won World War One at that time, and England had no real choice other than to surrender. But the Jews of Germany, the Zionist Jews of Germany and the Zionist Jews of England said, no, don't surrender. We'll get America involved in the war if you promise to give us Palestine. You know, and you think about it, you know, England, what right has England got to give Palestine to the European Jews? You've got about as much right as America has to give Japan to Paraguay. You know, it's completely ridiculous. But that's what happened. And the Balfour Declaration was basically acknowledging that. I mean, it wasn't a legal document or anything. It was just an acknowledgement of the agreement. And the Germans didn't even know that the Jews had made that agreement until the war trials after World War One. I can't remember what the trials were called, the peace trials. And there were all these Jews standing up there, and they waved this declaration and said, well, what about us? While you're dividing up Europe, you promised you'd give us Palestine. But I think England was kind of too embarrassed to really go through with the deal. But they did start sort of filtering in there anyway. The main settlements that happened in Israel when the Jews really got a hold of the place was in 1933, when Hitler sent most of them there with the transfer agreement. So the founding, the money and the funding that came from modern day Israel, and the 60,000 to 200,000 Jews that got sent
Max.
There came from Adolf Hitler.
Hey Max, I definitely appreciate your input, and I wish we would have had more time to do this. Unfortunately, we have to wrap it up. You've been listening to the People Speak Radio with your host, Michael Strasser. I would really like to thank Max Egan for coming on and remind you to visit his website, thecrowhouse.com, thecrowhouse.com. Thank you very much for coming on. Sorry we didn't have more time.
My pleasure, brother.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is